Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610, in for Payne and Pendergast. Sean Bajani, that's me. He is Brandon Scott. You can hit us up, 713-572-4610, 572-4610. You can call or text. Hit us up on Twitter as well, at Brandon K. Scott, at Sean Bajani. So, you know, talking about the Astros and the circle of trust, I mentioned this, and we kind of went through, you know, the catching position. And, you know, we have a little ways to the trade deadline, and I think some guys are going to start coming back around. Like, Castro is a better hitter than he's shown. Maldonado, you know, can still be productive at the plate and a threat. We've seen his pop, you know, routinely this season. He can come up in big spots, and certainly, like, whatever you get at the plate with him is almost like gravy. Yeah. Just so as long as you're getting that production from Alex Bregman, from Yuli Gurriel, which we still have yet to see with any realm of consistency with those two from the regular season as a whole. But Bregman started to come out of it. Like, he's getting a lot better at bats. Like, his bat is in the zone. He's starting to do what he does. He's pulling the ball with authority to left field, and Yuli's getting on base, putting the barrel on the bat much more so here in recent weeks. I think those guys have earned, you know, a little bit of leeway, but also too, like I mentioned, we examine these guys daily with a fine tooth comb, and for some reason almost expect, you know, perfection and have these numbers in mind. You know, baseball's a crazy thing. They escalate very quickly. Go look at Alex Bregman's stats over the course of the last week and a half, 2 weeks, that he's, I think at one point in time, he was like on a 7 or 8 game hitting streak. And I think he's hit safely in maybe like the last 12 games.
There was only,
with exception of one.
Yeah. There's only one game of the last 12. I didn't count the games. I counted the weeks so the last like 13 days or so. Mm-hmm. There was only one game that he didn't have a hit in. So he's been really good. And you talk about the last however many games. Last 7 games, his slash line would be a .400 batting average, .516 on base percentage, .680 slugging percentage. That is really damn good over the last 7 games. Over the last 15 games, obviously a larger sample size. So not as, you know, productive of a clip, but still pretty damn good. Stay with me. .321 batting average, .455 on base percentage, and .528 slugging percentage. So like that is closer to, that's not being 2019 MVP level. If Mike Trout doesn't exist, you win the MVP type of Alex Bregman. But that is middle of the order. Hey, you know, hitting in the three hole. Or sometimes maybe fourth, you know, batting in a very critical position, the production that you would hope for from that guy. And going back to the point we were making before about the catchers and kind of panicking a little bit because the offensive production was so bad there. Well, it was also compounded by the fact that you weren't getting production from some guys that have some equity built up with you within the fan base, and guys that were part of your World Series team have produced in the past, but weren't doing it in Bregman and Yuli. So, yeah, I mean, you look at what they've done in more recent games and feel like, hey, if they're closer to that than what they were 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, then you know you can handle the Maldonado and the Castros of the world not being great. Castro is an interesting thing because of the whole pinch. Yeah, and you mentioned this in the break too about how he was such a clutch pinch hitter. He would come in pinch hitting situations and deliver for you. The issue now is that you don't really feel comfortable with that. You don't feel great about the idea of, like, unless Castro was in there to play catcher, you don't feel comfortable with the idea of, hey, I'm just going to throw his bat out there and he's going to go get me a clutch hit.
Sure, because that's much not better. What he's known for.
Well, exactly, though. So, but last year it was his utility. You know, it was the usefulness. It was what made him useful last year.
Right.
Where now it's like, okay, I guess that guy would have to be, you know, Aledmys Diaz, Mauricio Dubon, J.J. Mattejevic, Aledmys Diaz or Chaz McCormick or somebody like that, whoever's on the bench.
Diaz's level of trust in any role really is astronomically high right now. I 100%. Mean, what he's done, not just at the plate, you know, this year in obviously a utility role, but in the field, he's made some incredible plays at second base and at shortstop to spell both Altuve and Pena. I mean, he's been incredible. I mean, to have a guy like that, and we knew him coming from, I believe it was Toronto a few years ago, like what he was all about defensively. I feel like he's taking it to a different level here. I mean, especially when you've had two guys at the caliber of Correa and Altuve and now Pena, what he's doing at shortstop, to be able to, you know, give those guys either one a rest and go with Diaz is huge.
Well, on top of the fact that, and I've made this point a few times, but on top of the fact that as talented as the Astros are and have been over the last several years, or, you know, over this stretch, this run, for as great as they've been and for as much fun as we've had watching them play, the last few years especially, particularly with Diaz on the team, it hasn't been a particularly deep team. Like, it's top heavy. It's got a really good top six. But it's not like there's this tremendous level of depth. They're not the Dodgers, who seems like everybody on the team is a plus level Major League Baseball player. They've been having every year 6 to 7, really good. If you want to count Maldonado, you make it 7 as a, you know, from a defensive standpoint.
Right.
But in the lineup, we're talking about like 6 guys for the most part that are really, really, really good. And then beyond that, no real discernible depth on the team. Whereas Diaz has been like the depth on the team, especially the last couple of years, has been Aledmys Diaz.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're
for the
right.
Most part.
But you always had guys step up in big spots.
Yes.
You know, when much is asked of them, you know, they've gotten it, whether it be from somebody in their bullpen or a utility guy, like you mentioned, Diaz. I would even throw out a Miles Straw, you know, the value that he brought, you know, from a base running, like a speed, you know, value. But he became a really good hitter here with the Astros. I mean, he was hitting 300 before, you know, he left. You know, if we're looking at like this circle of trust, like I think it's a lot deeper than people are giving them credit for. Like Alex Bregman seems to be a guy that people are way too quick to be out on because of injury or just, you know, sluggishness or streakiness at the plate, I'll say. But I mean, you know, from your staff of Verlander, Valdez, Urquidy, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, I mean, you were solid. I think they all have to be in that circle of trust. And if their series this past weekend in New York didn't do it for you, then lest I remind you, you know, that shouldn't have been a surprise for you because they were on big stages last year and they performed. Ryan Stanek, you know, Montero, Presley, those are the other three pitchers that I have in like my circle of trust that I feel like should be in yours and in everybody's right now. Montero had basically been automatic, you know, up until, you know, a couple of outings over the last week and a half, and I'll take that. Presley blowing a save in that Yankee series, but then coming back 2 days later and, you know, being the staple in game three of that 4-game set. Altuve, Brantley, Bregman, Alvarez, Pena, Tucker, Maldo, and Diaz. Like, these are the guys that you routinely rely on every single day that you have to feel incredible about. And I think your guys that are on the fringe, Yuli, of course, Phil Maton, in a particular order, I might add, and then I'll go Mattejevic, Dubon, and Castro right now.
These are the guys that
are. These are my fringe guys.
Fringe guys that are not necessarily in the.
They're not.
Circle.
They're not.
Give them to me again. I'm
they're
sorry.
They're not in the circle of trust, yeah. But they've either won, earned the consideration to like, you know, be in the conversation. Like they're going to come back out of it. Yuli's going to snap out of it. We know what kind of player he is. He's on a 7-game hitting streak right now. He's raised his average, you know, nearly 15 points over the last week and a half. The home run ball hasn't been there, but it's maybe coming. Okay. Mateljevic, you know, he's a really good replacement for Siri. I like from a defensive standpoint, but from a really a confident and a swagger standpoint, you know, like I feel like that guy brings the energy every single day.
Yeah. Well, and perhaps might have the bat to back it up as well.
Maybe like he's been off to a slow start. He's shown some pop. He started off like two out of his first 14, but they were both two big time home runs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He might be a boomer bust guy.
Might be.
I used that term incorrectly earlier, but that might fit JJ Mateljevic.
Yeah, maybe. Mauricio Dubon, I think, is a professional, you know, player. Yeah. Really good hitter, good defense. I think he's a really good fit for this team. Maton, I don't know why people are out on him.
Well, he can be hot and cold, but the bullpen, I would just say at large.
It's been one of the best in all of baseball.
It's like eighth in WAR. I mentioned WAR earlier. Out of relievers, out of all, you know, bullpens, they're eighth. You know, and I think they were higher than that at different points. Like, the only reason why things went bad, like Presley had a bad outing and the bullpen was taxed against the Yankees. I'm talking about Presley's outing against the Yankees, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And the bullpen was taxed. Like most of their main guys.
Well, the back end, because every single one of those guys gave you seven innings.
Right.
You know, the starters did.
Yeah. Well, but also the relievers, like all of your main guys, pitched three out of four games or something ridiculous.
It felt like
that.
A playoff series, like exactly how you would handle like an ALCS type scenario.
Yeah, the bullpen as a whole is in the circle of trust for me, my own personal one. I don't know about you guys.
I think that's fair. 713-572-4610. I think Jake Myers, by the way, is going to kick the door down on this thing. I think the Astros believe in him. I think proof's in the pudding. What we saw from him last year before he busted up his shoulder in game four of the ALDS, Burgundy.
Yeah, against the White Sox,
In
Chicago.
They believe in him. I believe in him. I think he's going to kick the door down. He's going to be a big-time guy for this team.
Looks awkward right now, but I agree. I think he'll pull it together once he gets real comfortable out there.
He's Brandon Scott, Sean Bajani. We're in for Payne and Pendergast. Coming up next, Deshaun Watson and his hearing continues. We've talked about the punishment potentially being levied. What do you need to see, and when do you need to see it from your Houston Texans, though? How do they move on from this completely? We'll talk about it next at Sports Radio 610.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
In for Payne and Pendergast this morning, I'm Sean Bajani. He is Brandon Scott. Appreciate you joining us. 713-572-4610. If you'd like to get in, call or text. You can tweet as well at Brandon K. Scott, at Sean Bajani. Boy, just watching the Astros re-air and the collision just happening on the re-air between Yordan Alvarez and Jeremy Peña yesterday, both on the ground for what seemed like an eternity yesterday. We'll get the status update on them, I imagine, here in the next 3 hours, 4 hours or so. Yeah.
Dude, this is such a frightening steel shot. Like, they changed the shot over to Jeremy Pena's face, and you see his eyes open, and he's kind of hunched over a little bit, but he's at least kind of sitting up. But Yordan is, like, laid out.
Everybody was more worried about Yordan,
I think, for sure.
than Pena, because, like, Pena hit the deck. And then he laid there for a few seconds, but he sat up and kind of looked at Yordan and then was like, oh, all right, I'm back down.
Yeah. Well, like, but the shot I was talking about was right before they kind of went to Ping, and then now he's standing up.
Yeah.
But then Yordan's still on the ground. And then that shot, and I know this is an audio medium, but it's just Yordan on the ground, you know, on his back, clearly in pain. You know the most productive hitter, certainly the best left-handed hitter in the game right now, and the guy you just paid, like, what a scary. I didn't see this live.
I didn't either,
Sean. I was watching the game, but I'm gonna be honest, maybe not a little TMI. I'd run in the restroom, and when I came out, all I saw was Yordan on the ground.
Yeah,
the shot we just saw with him just laying there.
Yeah,
and then I see the replay, and I'm like, that is the most frightening sight for an Astros fan that I could think of, period. Like,
like
absent of, you know, Justin Verlander's getting his arm chopped off.
But at least you were like, you were actively watching it, you know, like within the game. Like, I had to run, my kid's sick. I had to take him to the doctor yesterday. I had to help my father-in-law do something at my brother-in-law's house. Like, it was like project day, you know, after the doctor's appointment.
One of those days.
I had a little break and I'm checking Twitter, you know, to see what's going on. And I see like Chandler Rome and Brian McTaggart, like, oh no type stuff, like, ooh, that's not good. You know, oh, Yordan's down, Pena's down on the ground, not moving. And I'm like, oh my God, what happened? And so I'm like searching for video, and it takes, of course, you know, 5 minutes for, you know, everything to like load up. And I saw it and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is not good. But I didn't get a chance to check back until like late last night when I was watching, you know, the highlights. And, you know, I see McTaggart actually tweeted this, and forget about it, but this was back in 2007 when Carlos Lee and Adam Everett had a similar kind of collision at Minute Maid in shallow left field. That was when Everett broke his leg.
Yeah.
And Everett really was, that was his last year as an Astro in 2007. Everett really never regained like his form, you know, like 3 years later, I think he was out of the league, you know, after he went to Minnesota and then finished off with somebody else. For a couple of years, but
it just speaks to how
that, like, was my fear.
Yeah, how drastic this could be. Like, that tells you the worst of the possibilities here. And that's with respect to Adam Everett. That's Adam Everett. You know what I mean? Like, this is Yordan Alvarez. This could be like that could be David Ortiz. You know, like, he's, you know, that could be, you know what I mean?
Like, is that your first comp, like, of Alvarez?
No, the one that I go with is Carlos Delgado, and that's not my own. That's a Major League scout, Jeremy Booth, does some work over at KHOU, and when I was over there, that was the comp that he made, and he kind of sold me on it. So that I think Ortiz is easy for some obvious reasons, you know, bigger left-handed Latin guys. But Carlos Delgado from the swing, from the style of the swing, I think is probably a better comp.
You know,
but
I mentioned
but Yordan's got the pop, though, that is almost unrivaled.
I mentioned this earlier. Like, I feel like Yordan has approached and is really in the midst, this season especially, with what he's doing at the plate. Like, from a fear standpoint, we haven't seen, like, pitchers, you know, intentionally walk him, like, a ridiculous amount. Like, and I don't know that we'll see that particularly, because he does swing at some bad balls. You know, he has that.
Not as much anymore.
No.
It's getting. Oh, man. You know what? I missed that. They almost.
Where he almost fell off the cart.
Yeah. They almost pulled. Not just that he almost fell, but like, somebody want to say, Yordan, you ready? Or, hey, we're going to pull off.
Well, they
now
mentioned that during the broadcast. It was the Mets broadcast, actually, with was it Ron Darling and
I'm not sure who's on
the Keith
Mets.
Hernandez that does it? I can't remember.
I'm not sure who's on the Mets broadcast.
But yeah, I was listening to that. That's what they made a mention of. It's like, hey, man, you going to tell him you're ready to go or what? But, you know, I think he's approaching like a Barry Bonds fear type, threat at the plate.
Yeah.
You know, if you will. Like, if you leave one in the zone, it's going to go a long way. or he's going to find a way to beat you in the shift. Like he did routinely, it seemed like, in that Yankees series. And maybe it was earlier in this Mets series, too, the first game a couple of days ago. There's been so much baseball and over the last week, you know, it kind of all ties together. But he's been terrific.
Well, this point you're making is at the heart of the debate surrounding the Yankee series, and particularly the decisions to pitch to Aaron Judge in the ninth inning of the first game. Yeah. And or was it whichever game that was, the ninth inning of that walk off and the 10th inning of the walk off home run. So he had the walk off single and then the walk off home run in the 10th. The whole logic in that was that's their Yordan Alvarez. And Yordan Alvarez is our Aaron Judge. Like, they're analogous. They are the guys that you're talking about where you pitch around them or don't pitch to them in key situations like this. It's like, hey, in a situation where the game is on the line, even if, you know, splits and analytics tell you that the next guy isn't the guy you want to pitch to either, you don't want that guy to beat you. You know, like, you don't want to see Aaron Judge or Yordan Alvarez in a walk-off situation.
No. And, you know, look, the Yankees did the same thing to Yordan that the Astros should have done to Judge. You know, I don't remember the exact scenario or if it was even a possibility. I don't remember bases loaded in that first walk-off that Judge had.
No, it was runners on the corner, I think.
Runners on the corner. So you could have put him on if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And then I guess, would it have been like LeMahieu or something after that you would have faced instead?
I think that would have been Rizzo, too.
Rizzo, yeah.
But one of the two,
I think. LeMahieu in one of those games. I think it was the game that Presley came back and saved. That was game three.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, like, the Yankees, they got 3-1 on Yordan and said, all right, we're going to put him on, you know.
Because
we'll take our chances with the next guy. Yeah, it's sensible. Like, now we got to come into the zone. Yeah. And we got nowhere to put you outside of first base, and we're not going to let you hit the ball on us. So, you know, I think he commands a level of respect. It's not Bonds-esque yet, but there is absolute fear on behalf of the opponents and expectation from the fans' perspective when Yordan takes the left-hand batter's box. It's fun to watch, man. I'm super excited. I can't believe the Astros got him from the Dodgers. I can't believe the Dodgers didn't know who the hell this guy was or was going to be.
Right.
Like, it's just been incredible.
Yeah. Between Verlander, like, being in a time machine seemingly at 39 years old, coming off of Tommy John surgery, and that being the free agent move that you decided to make instead of re-upping on Carlos Correa, you made the decision to go with Verlander, a cheaper and more short-term option and perhaps one that impacts winning a little bit more because you've got a Jeremy Pena on the cheap. You don't have anything that's close to a Justin Verlander on this team. To make that decision and then for Yordan to be Yordan, like, to the point that you just made about the Dodgers not knowing that he was Yordan, that is an incredible fortune for the Astros and for the fans.
713-572-4610. Somebody asked on the text page, if Verlander wins another Cy Young or wins another World Series of the Astros, does he go into Cooperstown as an Astro? I think there's much more to his career left than just this one season. Like, that question's kind of geared towards, all right, if he wins a Cy Young, presumably this year, and another World Series this year, you know, does he go to Cooperstown as an Astro? I think the guy's probably got 3 or 4 more years left in him. At least I think that's what he wants.
Well,
I don't know what he has left, but I think it's what he wants.
But if that be the case, Sean, then the answer is undoubtedly yes.
If he finishes his career as an Astro, I think it's undoubtedly yes. But if he goes back to Detroit.
Well, no, but Detroit sucks. So, like, the thing is.
Or if he goes anywhere else, like.
Yeah, if he goes somewhere that's winning. Here's the thing. If he stays here, let's just use this example that the Texer makes. And he wins a Cy Young and they win the World Series this year. That's 2 Cy Youngs and 2 World Series with the Astros. Not to mention the other 2 that he was at least on. I know he didn't pitch last year, but he did pitch in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 2 World Series wins, 2 Cy Youngs, and also on the team for 2 more appearances on top of however many ALCSs and however many years that it's been, like that run. So it would be hard to, like, I know he's won Cy Youngs elsewhere, you know, with the Tigers, but like that level of 2 Cy Youngs and 2 World Series, I feel like he would have to do something equal to that, or, you know what I mean? Like, he'd have to do a lot at the next stop, wherever it is, for him not to go in as an
Astro. What's Nolan Ryan in as?
That's a great question.
Is he a Ranger?
I think
he was like 9 years as an Astro in the 80s.
Yeah, but it seems like it would make more sense for him to be in as a Ranger. That's a good question.
I think he is in as a Ranger. I should know the answer to that question, but like Verlander, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22. Like, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but we were up against it. Like, Verlander's pitched 89 innings this year. I think his player option...
He's in as an Angel.
Ryan?
That's what it says, wow. As primary team.
Wow, okay. Like, that's what his bust has, like the cap?
Yeah, well, the cap has all the teams on there.
Interesting. Like, he went in when they started kind of doing finicky things like that, I think. There's probably a player in there with nothing on their cap, you know? Huh. Like, I don't know. Like, if you put Ryan's in the Hall of Fame. Like, yeah. Who should he be in as? Like, my childhood, I remembered him as a Ranger.
Right.
I was too young to remember him as an Astro. I mean, but it's like a generational thing. He spent most of his time as an Astro, I think, throughout his career. But it was probably the least noteworthy time from a national standpoint for Ryan and the Astros because they were a middling team. He, you know, put together some terrific seasons for mediocre teams as an Astro. But nevertheless, like, I just think, like, if Verlander continues on as an Astro, yes. But that question is unanswerable at this point in time because you don't know what his decision will be at season's end. If he pitches 130 innings this year and that option kicks in for $25 million next year and he opts out, do the Astros renegotiate with him, give him another long-term deal, you know, that's maybe 30 to 35 per? Does he go somewhere else where he gets the money and another opportunity to contend? It's all very in flux at this point in time, I think.
Yeah, but I think that...
If you're the Astros, you can't let this guy go right now, though.
Well, and also, more than anything, to me, this fits more in line with your philosophy as an organization and the type of free agent deals that you do. Like, the reason why there's no more Gerrit Cole here, why there's no more George Springer or Carlos Correa, is because all of those deals were going to be extensive, like 7 years and more. And I know Carlos ended up signing for much shorter than that, but that was the idea, that they wanted longer-term deals. Verlander is back right now because he signed a shorter-term deal. It was a short-term investment. He would be no more than a 3 to 4 year investment past this. I don't think more than 3 years.
Right.
And so that's
maybe even option attached to that.
Right. And so that's more along the lines of how they like to plan and the type of deals that they like to give out. Not a long term deal, but an impactful one that, you know, that is much more, that doesn't handcuff you long term, sure, and benefit you in the short term.
And they've pulled no punches in recent years. You know, yeah, we talked about decisions with Keuchel and Springer and Correa. He's Brandon Scott, Sean Bajani, Sports Radio 610, in for Payne and Pendergast this morning. Coming up next, how far away are the Texans from moving on from everything that has transpired over the past three seasons? We'll discuss next at Sports Radio 610.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
In for Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast this morning. Sean Bajani and Brandon Scott with you. Good morning, everybody. Sports Radio 610, glad to have you here. 713-572-4610. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, call or text 572-4610. You can tweet at us as well, at Sean Bajani for myself, at Brandon K. Scott. Ben Gary producing, doing a great job as always. Question for you, how far away is this Houston Texans team from moving on from everything that's transpired over the past three seasons? If I'm looking at it, I'm being realistic, I'm at least excited or intrigued. I'll put it to you this way. Excited is too much, because I'm not really. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not excited. I am intrigued to see that this team is starting to resemble one that is within the National Football League. Like, from the general manager, from a proven NFL head coach now in Lovie Smith. Like, from the holdover, the stopgap, the Bo Porter-esque David Culley situation that happened last year with that whole mess.
What a reference by you. That is a great one.
I think that's a great cross-reference. Right?
Yeah. No,
like, that's what it was. It was a stopgap.
Not just a stopgap, but even when I obviously didn't cover Bo Porter, and so don't know him as well as I know David Culley, but not just a stopgap, but also felt like by the end of it, like, hey, what was that? Like, you knew it was a stopgap, but also feel like, hey, what was that about? Why did we do that?
Well, and attached, like, the $22 million the Texans paid Culley not to coach the Houston Texans anymore. It's like, yeah. What's that about?
What were we doing? What was going on there?
Yeah. So, like, I'll give them that. Like, I'm intrigued by that. I'm interested to hear your opinions on it. 713-572-4610, because, look, we're inside 70 days away from a kickoff in the 2022 season. Training camp is going to get started here in less than a month, and we're just on the cusp of getting to see these guys on a field every single day, practicing, working towards something. Like, I feel like you have to start with, like, if I'm going to ask the question, how far away is this team? I'm going to go ahead and look at the quarterback situation and Davis Mills. Like, Davis Mills, I feel like, was very David Culley-esque in that, all right, here's a guy that's just going to step in and be a part of this whole process until, like, we're really ready to ramp up and move on. But then I feel like there's this film, you know, this aura surrounding this quarterback situation where it's like, you know what, Davis Mills might be able to do a little something here.
Yeah.
Where are you on that? And, like, if he's going to succeed, he has to have weapons around him to do so. And aside from anybody not named Brandon Cooks, I don't know exactly who the hell that is, because, full disclosure, this mess that has transpired over the course of the last 3 years, I would probably lose a bet to anybody that said, Bajani, I'll bet you $100 you can't name five freaking dudes on this team right now. I'd probably lose that bet.
That's it.
I don't know if I could.
So I'm processing a little bit of some of this that you said, because I found it interesting. I recoiled a little bit at the Davis Mills was David Culley-esque, but once you explained it, as far as, like, the whole stopgap angle, I get it. But I will say, you know, and anybody that's been listening to me on here knows that I'm not, like, sold necessarily on Davis Mills. Intrigued. And somewhat excited, you know, just because it's going to be a new year, but not anywhere close to sold on Davis Mills. But I will say, I think that it's safe to say that Davis Mills will be a better NFL quarterback than David Culley was a head coach. And that's not going to take much. That's not saying much about him, but I do feel comfortable about that.
To be honest with you, I think he's already accomplished that in his one season with the Texans thus far last year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that he's being brought back as the starter for a second year and David Culley
is not being brought back.
To put it in perspective, like I feel like just the numbers alone, resemblance of a quarterback in the NFL,
particularly the end of the season, right?
We've seen far worse that have come through here, even during the Bill O'Brien era before Deshaun Watson existed as a Houston Texan, when you were going through, you know, the combinations of Ryan Mallett, Fitzpatrick, Case Keenum, like two or three different times. I felt like we couldn't quit him.
Brian Hoyer, you know. TJ Yates.
Oh, yeah. All those guys.
And shout out to TJ Yates. That wasn't a drive by on TJ Yates, but you get what we're saying.
No.
That level of quarterback.
He won the Texans' first playoff game, right?
That's what I mean. That's why I said it. With respect, you know, to what TJ did contribute, because he was never expected to be a guy like that, right?
I'm not going to go ahead and I can't say, you know, that Mills earned, well, I can't not say it, I guess, that he didn't earn the right to be back, you know, as a Houston Texan and, you know, be the starter. I think he's even beyond competing to be the starter, because he showed enough within an organization as discombobulated as they were last year on both sides of the ball, really all three phases of the game, and from the front office, that whole fiasco. Like, yes, he has more than earned the right to be the starter. There's conversation, man, does there need to be somebody else within the quarterback room, you know, with Kyle Allen and Jeff Driscoll and this Kevin Hogan fella.
Yeah. There is a feeling, speaking to this point you're making, Sean, there is a feeling that if Davis Mills is your starter, then you didn't necessarily do enough to supplement that on the back. Like, you don't have necessarily a viable backup. It, like, just in case Davis Mills is a disaster, then what you have to go to, the best of it, is Kyle Allen. Like, you can reasonably not be satisfied or excited about that. But
right,
there's also a logic that says if you're really investing in Davis Mills and you're really trying to, like, give this a go, that you don't want somebody that's threatening him or breathing down his neck to, you know, before he even has a chance to win the competition. Like, you want the job. What I'm trying to say is you want the job to clearly be his, if that's the direction that you're going in, which seems to be the one that they're going in. At the very least for this year, they want it to be his job, and
that's fine.
His job to lose.
And that's fine, but you have to put him in a position to succeed.
Yeah, which is the question.
And, you know, Brandon Cooks, Nico Collins, Chris Conley, Chris Moore, Jalen Camp, Drew Estrada, Connor Weddington, Davion Davis. Your wide receiver core right now. And look, quite similarly to that of the state of the Houston Rockets, let's just say, we know about their athleticism and the individual talent on that roster. We haven't seen it put together yet. The last couple of seasons has involved a lot of me players, a lot of I players, and no real cohesiveness, right? I think some of that is the staff's fault. I think some of that is just, you know, the players and the what is being asked of them, you know. Clearly, the way it stands right now, you're young, you're super talented. I don't know that the Houston Texans, we can say the same thing. I know they're younger in some spots. I know they're talented in some spots. But I don't know that I can really come in here and say that, yes, while you're resembling, you know, more of a put together, you know, organization now from a GM and a head coach and a staff standpoint, that you actually have the talent now in which you can routinely compete week in and week out to win football games. I don't think you're there yet. And I'm not exactly understanding why this season can't be more about bringing in good, proven talent to help younger guys develop.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we're still a year away from even that stage.
So we are. And so I'll say that from a team building and from a roster construction perspective, right? From that standpoint, I think that this is the first year of the rebuild. Last year was year zero. It was a nothing year. I thought a lot of it was the waste of time between the David Culley thing. And part of it, it's not like it was anybody, like, our fault or, you know, the Texans' fault necessarily. Like, this is just where they were. I think they could have done some better thing. They could have hired a better coach.
Yes.
And I think they could have made a lot of better moves in terms of making themselves competitive.
It felt like they got caught with their pants around their ankles.
They did. I think that's a fair characterization of it. They definitely got caught with their pants around their ankles,
even in the midst of having a new GM and kind of wiping the slate clean. I think this is really the first year of that, of an infusion of young talent. Okay, the first year you get your draft, like last year you had a 5-person draft class. You had a 5-man draft class in 2021.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this year you have a 9-man draft class. So almost double the draft class, which matters, is really important. Plus, for what it's worth, and credit to Nick Caserio and the staff over there for this part, they did a good job, it seems like, in evaluating the guys, the 5 guys that they drafted last year in those slots. Like Davis Mills, I said, I don't know if he's a franchise quarterback or anything like that, but third round, a guy that's going to start in year two for you at quarterback, you could do a lot worse than that. They moved up to get Nico Collins and traded some things away, but he looks like he might be your second best wide receiver right now.
Easy.
Your second weapon.
Yeah.
And you go down the line, Brevin Jordan, Garrett Wallow, and Roy Lopez, all of these guys are significant contributors, or at very least should be significant contributors to your team this year. And then you look at the talent that they brought in this draft that I think is, at least has the potential to be significant. Okay. So from a roster construction standpoint, I feel like this is the first year that you're actually seeing any progress, because last year felt like a waste. You did have a lot of picks, and the picks that you did have were from the third round on back, you know?
Yeah.
And then you were dealing with all the other stuff on top of that. So now between the new players and the coaching staff, okay, you got credible coaches. You mentioned that.
Yes.
With Lovie Smith. You've got Pep Hamilton, who hasn't been an offensive coordinator in a while, but is somebody that's widely respected around the league, was a coach and GM for the XFL team before COVID happened and shut that down. You know, has worked with so many of the really good quarterbacks of the past, namely Andrew Luck, but also, you know, Justin Herbert, you know, other guys.
Sure.
Baker Mayfield, I think, for a time.
A talent developer.
Yeah.
But can he be an offensive coordinator?
And play caller. Yeah, that's
play
a caller. That is a question.
Those are two different things. You know, you going through all of this, like, I'm thinking to myself, like, this is an opportunity, and it's hard to accept it even still for me that everything has transpired over the course of the last, you know, 2-3 seasons with the Texans. But this is an opportunity to get on the ground floor. And it may not be ideal. You might not have wanted to have this happen, and I know none of us did. But the situation is what it is. And it's going to be it feels very much like, I mean, it is like the Astros, you know, situation from 2011, 12, 13, 3 straight 100 loss seasons, you know, to building back up, becoming a 72 win ball club in, what was it, 14, and, you know, a level of respectability in 15, doing something against the Kansas City Royals in the postseason that you probably weren't supposed to do at all, pushing to the brink.
The Royals, who won the World Series that year, by the
Royals
way.
Royals that won the World Series. And I think prior to that, didn't you beat the Yankees in a wild card or something like that? I can't remember.
I think so.
It might have been the following year. Nevertheless, like, we saw the progression up, and we went from a point in time where we didn't really know anybody or have an affinity or an emotional attachment to any one guy on those teams. Like Jose Altuve, Dallas Keuchel, Marwin Gonzalez, those were guys that experienced those 100-loss seasons with you and then ended up being valuable pieces to, you know, winning teams, a championship team in 2017. Like, you have an opportunity as a Houston Texans fan right now to see things progress from the ground floor to, you know, sky's really the limit. You can't put a limit on it. I mean, at this point in time, because we don't know exactly what Nick Caserio is capable of doing with, you know, a full draft class at his disposal, you know, a salary cap, you know, with wiggle room at his disposal, and a proven NFL head coach, maybe a guy that hadn't done it in 7 or 8 years in Lovie Smith. But is he going to be long for this haul with the Houston Texans to get back to a level of respectability? I think you had that, to me, is a small shred of excitement looking at this Houston Texans team. And I think quite similarly to that of the Houston Rockets, just so odd that over the course of a 5-year span that you'd gone from a golden era of Houston sports to now, hey, step right up. You can get in on the ground floor. And
well, and the most exciting players on your team are ones that either have never played before or have given you like 6 to 8 games of promise. Like, think about that. The most exciting players on the Texans,
Let's include Davis Mills in there. So Davis Mills quarterback.
See if you can list the most exciting players on the Houston Texans.
No, I can.
Okay.
Davis Mills and then the rookies.
Yeah.
Davis Mills, Jonathan Greenard, basically all the guys that you have drafted, which, by the way, on your team is not a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't have a guy on this team that goes beyond the 2019 draft class. You know what I mean? Like, from 3 years ago, Titus Howard and Max Sharpie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. 2020, you're looking at, you're basically just talking about Ross Blacklock and Jonathan Greenard for the most part. Charlie Hecks in there, too, as your swing tackle and might start some games for you. But in a worst case scenario. But, you know, beyond that, just like the guys that you've drafted are the guys that are exciting. And not a lot of them have played a lot of meaningful football or good football. You know, only one class has been a part of a winning season.
Yeah.
That's the 2019 class.
But I think, you know, the core group of talent developers, and Pep Hamilton being one of those guys, certainly at the offensive coordinator position right now, is maybe what gets you excited about, you know, those rookies, is that you do have talent developers on this staff right now. So that is encouraging. And it'll be interesting to see when training camp does roll around what exactly you've got coming up for this 2022 season. 713-572-4610, 572-4610 is the number to get in. You can call or text, tweet at us at Brandon K. Scott, at Sean Bajani. Coming up next, a few more questions that I have in regards to the Texans on the defensive side of the ball. Because to me, you know, respectability, that factor for the Houston Texans, if you're not going to have that playmaking and excitability in the offensive side, you can stay in games. And that kind of was the Texans' moniker for a number of years, is what they were able to supply on the defensive side of the ball. That put them in position to win a lot of ball games, or at least be in a lot of ball games. How do you feel about those guys coming up next? We'll get there. It's Sports Radio 610.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.